on me. It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me. What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm Jordan in the clutch, boy. You bitten on me. It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me. What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about?
Alrighty, guys, happy Black History Month. It is the first episode of the Auto Bid in the month of February. We hope everybody's enjoying themselves, everybody is safe and warm, as we've gotten some snow over here in the United States. I know Drew's over there in Portugal enjoying some nice weather over there, but we're over here in America getting some freezing cold temperatures on the East Coast, some snow. So I'm very envious of you and your situation right now, Drew, but nevertheless, we're here. Black History Month. Had some great basketball over the weekend. But before we get into all that, I want to remind you guys, as always, to make sure you guys are subscribing to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get this podcast. Make sure you guys are subscribing to us, man. Give us a rating. Give us a comment, man. It really does help go a long way to share this podcast. If you like us, please engage with our content, man. And helps us to get this podcast out to the right people and the right audience, man. So thank you to everybody who have been engaging with our content, man. And it really does mean a lot to us. Also, make sure you're streaming my guy, Pull Up Tay's music. That was him on the intro. It's going to be him again on the outro with new project, Why Stop Now, is out now. Make sure you're streaming it on all platforms, Apple Music, Spotify, wherever you get to music, YouTube. Make sure you guys are tapping in to my guy's music, man. But Drew, how you doing over there in the warm weather over there in Portugal, man?
I'm all right, man. You know, it's February, so it's getting a little warmer now. It's not as warm as it's going to be probably in a month or so, but, you know, it's good, man. You know, still getting to the beach a little bit, enjoying the sun, you know, so definitely cannot complain, man. You know, I'm definitely seeing all the snow back there, seeing folks shoveling their cars out, man, and I do not miss that one bit. So, you know, no complaints, man, you know.
Hey, man, I hear that, man. Definitely glad to be back on here talking some hoops, man. We're going to have an interview with Tristan Freeman from Bustin' Brackets, man, one of the best, you know, up-and-coming media guys out right now, man. He does a lot of great writing for Bustin' Brackets, man. He's over in the Pittsburgh area, so he's covering Pitt, Duquesne, Robert Morris, man. I feel sorry for him for that because, you know, Pitt is over there, not very competitive in the ACC. Robert Morris is toward the bottom of the Horizon League, and Duquesne is struggling in the A-10. But nonetheless, get to see some other great teams in all those leagues, you know, come through, you know, the Pittsburgh area. But nevertheless, make sure you guys are giving my guy Tristan a follow. He's a great guy and puts out some great content on college basketball, man. So make sure you guys are giving him a follow. I'm sure you guys have seen Dickie V shouting out his work at Bustin' Brackets, man. So if Dickie V can tap into his content, man, so can you. So definitely excited to get you guys to that interview later this week. But if you guys missed it, man, we debuted our Week 13 college basketball All Facts Media mid-major top 25 rankings. And there was a lot of movement this week, man. As there was last week, a bunch of teams took some L's. We had a UAB took a loss to Marshall after beating Western Kentucky. Louisiana Tech lost to North Texas, then beat Rice. San Francisco lost to St. Mary's, turned around and beat Santa Clara. Morehead State lost to Murray State, beat Southeastern Missouri and Tennessee State. Princeton lost to Yale, like I said that they would. For the record on this podcast, I said that Princeton would lose to Yale. So that's now two straight victories for me over Drew on this podcast. And we're also predicting that UAB would beat Louisiana Tech. So let the record show that that's now two consecutive weeks that I've been right and Drew has been wrong. So just go ahead.
You only picked two games. The heck? Yeah, like we picked every game, you'd be right.
Listen, man, if you ask me my opinion more, I'll be right more. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah, right.
That is neither here nor there, man. I mentioned, had a lot of losses, man, a lot of movement in our top 25. The number one, Murray State, is still locked in there. Boise State is up to two this week. Iona at three, St. Mary's four, Ohio five. And for the rest of our top 25 poll, make sure you guys head to our Twitter and tap in to our rankings, man. They're right there on our Twitter page. So make sure you guys tap into that content. But Drew, which of those losses, man, was most surprising to you this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, for me, man, it was definitely that UAB loss to Marshall, man. I mean, Marshall, the team that was at the bottom of the CIA, I believe they were like 0-6 or 0-7 going into that matchup against UAB. And UAB was their first Conference USA win, man. I mean, UAB is a team that had been playing exceptional lately. Obviously, they got that win over Louisiana Tech. Jordan Walker has been playing extremely well, man. But, you know, they laid an egg in that game against Marshall, man. And that was definitely a surprise to me, because when you have a team like UAB, who a lot of people think has, you know, NCAA tournament hopes, and I would say it's probably the favorite right now in Conference USA for most people. You know, you drop a team to the worst team in the conference, definitely not a good sign, man. You never want to be a team that's playing down to the level of competition. You kind of want to be able to, you know, put your best foot forward in every game, every time you step out on the court, man. So that was definitely the most surprising loss, man. And secondly, this was this happened actually last night. You know, how the press, Chattanooga took a loss to Samford last night, which was extremely surprising to me, man, because Chattanooga had been playing well lately. You know, as of late, they kind of, you know, in my opinion, separated themselves at the top of the SoCon, man, but they dropped one to Samford. And Chattanooga, the team, obviously, with Malachi Smith, David John Baptiste, Sylvia D'Souza, man, they're a team that's extremely, extremely talented, man, but, you know, they definitely have some head-scratching losses. Obviously, that one to Samford, they took a loss to Western Carolina earlier in conference play, man. So, I mean, again, you know, a team of that talent level, man, usually you can't be dropping on these type of games, man, to these teams. I can see if it was maybe to a Wolford or a team like Furman, man, but if you're Chattanooga and you're UAB, man, you definitely want to avoid these type of losses. You know, one, just because, you know, if you're trying to get into the NCAA tournament, then you want to be playing your best around this time of the year, you know, now that we're getting into February. But two, these are also teams that, you know, I think a lot of people have you know, UAB and Chattanooga are teams that could have won games in the NCAA tournament. And now with these losses, I mean, you're just killing your potential seeding in the NCAA tournament, man. You want to try to get as high as possible, man. But these guys are probably going to end up having to see, you know, pretty good teams, man, in that first-round matchup, man. So you definitely want to try to avoid as many of these bad losses as you can, man. But those were definitely the most surprising losses of the week for me.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. I think that Chattanooga one definitely surprising. I think for, you know, Samford, a team that had a pretty good non-conference, man. They even, you know, debuted in our top 25 for a hot second there before, you know, they had a loss. But definitely one that Chattanooga is going to be kicking themselves about, especially when you're, you know, looking at this regular season championship race in the SoCon. So they're now tied with Furman in the loss column at 2 losses apiece. Furman's at 9-2. Chattanooga's now at 8-2. And they have another game pending up here in a few weeks, later in February, that's going to probably decide the regular season championship game. It's going to be Saturday, February 12th, between Furman and Chattanooga. Obviously, Chattanooga won that first game when the two played at home. This next game, when they play on the 12th, is going to be at Furman. That's going to be a huge game. You talk about the regular season championship in the SoCon. Furman is playing some great basketball right now. They've won 5 in a row. They're 11-1 on their home court. So if Furman wins that game, and you now are a game up, you know, on Chattanooga, you know, we could potentially start talking about Furman to getting back in their rankings, because they were in there in the beginning of the season as well, man. So I'm definitely going to be something to keep an eye on as we look at the SoCon going forward. But like I mentioned, man, we had a lot of movement this week. Also, don't want to forget, we had a new entry to our top 25 in Seattle out of the WAC. After they were off to an 8-0 start in conference play. Drake re-enters our poll at number 17. As they got a huge win over Loyola Chicago. Iona, we mentioned earlier, is all the way up to 3 as a bunch of teams in front of them lost this week. So, speaking of Iona, man, me and you are MAC guys. You know, both played at Quinnipiac and the MAC, played against Iona for a number of years, man. Obviously, we've seen Rick Pitino and his politician self, you know, on Twitter kind of lobbying for, you know, Iona at-large bids and, you know, potential Final Four contenders is what he called them in one tweet that I saw he put out. But will this be the year that Iona wins the game in the NCAA tournament?
I think it could be, Ace. You know, and the reason why I say that, I mean, obviously, you know, Iona overall is 0-15 in the NCAA tournament, although they did get a win in 1980. However, it was ruled, I guess NCAA, you know, ruled it to be, I guess one of the players was disqualified because apparently he had hired an agent during the season. So, you know, they took the loss away, man. So the official record is 0-15 for Iona, man. They haven't been able to get a win in the NCAA tournament, despite the fact that they've been in the NCAA tournament seemingly every year. You know, they've won the MAC, last five years that they've had a MAC tournament, they've been victorious, man. But speaking of this year's Iona team, man, I think that this definitely could possibly be the year that they win a game in the NCAA tournament, you know, namely because last year in year one of the Rick Pitino era, they almost pulled off an upset against Alabama in that first round game. They had a lead, you know, led for a large majority of that game. Obviously, Alabama was able to pull it out in the end. You know, but when you look at this year's roster, man, I mean, they're led right now by Tyson Jolly at almost 16 points per game. They're strong on the inside with Nery Jr. Joseph giving them about 13-8. But that third, I mean, when you have a third guy in Elijah Jordan who's getting you 11 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 assists, but obviously, I mean, I watched that Monmouth game. He absolutely took over down the stretch. You know, had 24 points in that game, and where Iona couldn't really get much going. Man, he hit some big-time threes. And, I mean, he's seemingly like the third option on offense. You know, they also obviously have Quinn Szczęsny, and Dylan Van Dyke, two guys who can stretch it out from three-point range. But I think the blue guy for them is Barry Jean Louise. You know, obviously, he's not a guy that's going to score a lot of points, man, but Swiss Army knife, you know, great defender. And I think when you look at Iona, man, they're a team that exudes confidence, you know, and it comes from their head coach. Like you mentioned, man, I mean, he's already, you know, on Twitter talking about, you know, Iona at large and this and that, man. But, you know, they had some big-time wins. They beat Alabama earlier in this year, kind of in the NCAA tournament rematch game. And, you know, we see how good Alabama's, you know, been this year. Obviously, just getting that win over Baylor in the SEC Big 12 championship game, man. So that win's looking a lot better as the season goes on, man. But, you know, I think when you look at this team, man, they're complete. You know, it's not a team that's, you know, one guy is getting 20 to 25 points per game. They're very balanced, and they defend. And when you bring that combination into an NCAA tournament game with Patino on the sideline, you know, there's not too many coaches that are going to look to the other sideline and be like, all right, man, like, I'm coaching against Patino. I don't, you know, it's don't get a little spooky. You know, so I think that this definitely could be the year, man, that Iona breaks through. Obviously, a lot of it's going to be just depending on seeding. I think last year they were a 15 seed. They had to go up against a 2 seed in Alabama. You know, that's definitely a tough out, man. But, I mean, if they can maybe sneak up to, like, the 12 line, maybe 11, then I think that's when you can start talking about them finally advancing past that first round. So, I mean, I think if they can finish the MAC season strong, I think that they can definitely be in the competition for maybe, like, a 12 seed. And if you get a 12-5 matchup, we know, man, those are always sweet for the upset picks, man. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see, man. But I think that this could be the year that they finally break through and get it done.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Drew. I think the biggest reason is the seed. You know, right now, the net currently has them at 57. They're currently 3-3 in quad one and quad two games. Currently 1-3 against quad one and 2-0 against quad two. So even 500 there for Iona. And you mentioned the balance earlier, man. I mean, their KenPom currently has them at 68 in the country, but they're 76th in offensive efficiency and 62nd in defensive efficiency. So, you know, just basically right on top 75 in the country in both of those metrics, man, for Iona. And for a team out of the MAC, that's pretty good, man, when you're, you know, when you see that they're probably the only team that is even remotely close to any of those numbers, man. And they're going to be a team that, if they potentially can win out in the MAC, Sean Paul thinks that they're going to go undefeated. I don't think they're going to go undefeated, but let's say that they do go undefeated. They run it up to 20-0, and they're coming in at 28-3. Their seed is going to be pretty nice in the NCAA tournament, man, because those metrics are going to look pretty good for them. So I think for them, you almost don't really want to win that many games because you mess around and get on the, you know, 8 line or something. You got to see a 1 seed in the second round, or you got to see a really good 9 seed. You might mess around and see, you know, a really good team out of the Big East or the Big 12 or something like that in an 8-9, which you probably don't want to do. So for them, I think they're probably comfortable, you know, getting that 12-13 seed. If they do, you mess around and end up in that 12-13 range, you get a 5 seed and then a 4 seed, and I think you'll take that. And then you mess around and the other side of the bracket might pull up. So you might mess around and get a 13 seed for the right to go to the Sweet 16. So I think that this team definitely has the swagger. They have all the pieces. They have the coaching to make a run. So I'm definitely with you that I think this is the year that Iona gets it done and gets a win in the NCAA tournament.
Sure, man. You know, we definitely have to, you know, see how that shakes out, man. But speaking of the NCAA tournament, switching gears a little bit to the Mountain West, obviously their team, I mean, excuse me, their conference has a plethora of teams that can make it into the field this year. How many bids do you think is reasonable to assume that the Mountain West will get going into this year's NCAA tournament?
I think you could pencil them in for 4. I think you could pencil them in for 4 this year, and obviously that would be huge for them. Obviously, last year they only got 2 in with Utah State and who else got in last year? Utah State and San Diego State, I believe, was it that they got in, right? Colorado State didn't get in last year, but
– yeah, didn't get in last year.
This year, if they were able to get 4 seeds, 4 teams in the tournament this year, man, that would be absolutely outstanding, man, for them. I mean, I think right now you're looking at Colorado State is, you know, should be a lock to get in the tournament. And I think Boise State is looking pretty good right now. They're currently 30th overall in KenPom. San Diego State is at 32. What's surprising is that Utah State is at 34th in KenPom, which is surprising because, I mean, they had some great wins in their non-conference, man, and they've been able to kind of ride those, you know, throughout the year. And they also, they're 46 in offensive efficiency and 46 in defensive efficiency. Obviously, they're 13-9 overall, which is, you know, they're going to have to win the Mountain West tournament. But they're a team that could do that. You know, they had the talent to do so. And you talk about Wyoming, man. We saw them, you know, with a huge game on their home court and be able to get a win over Colorado State. The other day, Hunter Maldonado was one of the best-kept secrets in the entire country. 6'7 point guard, can post up. Great pace, can pass the ball, man. Great size. He's not a great shooter, but he's a guy that if you go – like the other day, Colorado State was, you know, going under his ball screen. They were making a point to get under those ball screens. They started setting him a little bit lower, which was extremely smart. And, you know, he's a guy that if you leave him butt naked, he drilled one. They set the ball screen like an elbow, and they tried to go under the ball screen, and he drilled a three, which is, you know, which we expect him to do. So he's a guy that can carry you, man, for a Wyoming team. And, you know, we already mentioned San Diego State, and you know, they're you know, right now it's currently second in the country in adjusted defensive efficiency, man, which is unbelievable. Boise State is fifth. They played a game earlier this year that was, I believe it was a 42-37 final score of that basketball game. So both of those teams are elite defensively, man, and, you know, they're gonna have opportunity, man. I think they should expect to get four teams in the tournament this season, man. I think Wyoming, Boise State, Colorado State, and San Diego State definitely all are deserving teams to be in the field. And a team like a Fresno State, who's currently 46th in KenPom, and Utah State is currently 34th in KenPom, are teams that could potentially, you know, sneak into that conversation, man, if they can, you know, get some good wins coming down the stretch here in conference play.
Yeah, I mean, I think the good thing for the Mountain West is that, you know, we mentioned this, you know, at length, we talked about this a little bit in our interview with Tristan, man, but for the Mountain West and for a lot of these other mid-major leagues, man, there's a lot of opportunity out there, you know, with how bad a lot of these power conferences have been, you know, namely the ACC. Obviously, the Pac-12 is down. The Big Ten isn't great this year, but they're still going to have a lot of tournament teams, I would say, but there's going to be a lot of bids that are going to be, you know, that are going to be to be had this year, man. So I think if a lot of those Mountain West teams, like a Boise State, man, we see – I mean, last year they were in position to get an NCAA tournament bid, but they folded down the stretch. You know, I think that if Boise State can kind of learn from what they did last year, continue to play well, man, they're a team, obviously, that should be in. I think if they can get a few more quality wins, San Diego State, Colorado State, you know. So I think the big question is going to be if, you know, a team like Wyoming or Utah State or, like you mentioned, the Fresno State can kind of climb into that conversation. But even if not, man, I mean – four big Mountain West would be great for the conference. I think it would be great for mid-major basketball in general to see some of these, you know, smaller schools, quote unquote, get into the NCAA tournament, man. And we'll have to see what happens, man. But I think that'll be something that is definitely something to watch going forward.
I think for Wyoming, man, they have a huge spot tonight. Wyoming is going to get Boise State on their home court, coming off with that huge win over Colorado State, man. That's going to be absolutely huge because both of those teams are currently first and second in Mountain West. Boise State currently 8-0 in first place. Wyoming 6-1 in second place. So, you know, if you're Wyoming and you can get a win here with Boise State and, you know, tie to them for first place in the league, man, that's going to be huge for them going forward. And it's going to be a huge resume building win for them, getting another quad one win moving forward, man, because those at the end of the day are going to be what ends up defining you when you talk about getting into the NCAA tournament is, you know, who have you beaten, who has beaten you, who have you beaten, you know, and what those numbers looking like. So I think Wyoming currently right now is 1-2 in quad one games, 2-1 in quad two games. They're currently 3-3. This would be another quad one win that they can get a win over Boise State tonight. They're currently 13-0 against quad 3-4. So, you know, they have a really good, you know, resume right now, and they can only add to that tonight if they were able to get a win over Boise State on their home court. So, definitely a huge spot for them. And I think it's definitely probably a more important game for Wyoming. You have to win on your home court. You know, I think if you're trying to win a conference title and you're trying to get into the tournament, you have to protect your home court. That's something they've done all year. They're 8-0 on their home court. We mentioned them obviously beating Colorado State in their home court. Laramie is one of the, you know, toughest places to play in the Mountain West. They packed that thing, you know, for the Colorado State game. I'm sure they'll pack it again tonight. So we'll see what happens, man. Big game for Wyoming out of the Mountain West.
Yeah, man. I mean, shoot, that's a gem right there, Ethan. Man, I'm listening to Phil C. State the other day, and Archie Miller says, you know, talking about obviously Dave's coaching in the Big Ten, and he goes, you know, in February, when you're talking about regular season championships, you know, regular season championships, you can't lose on your home court. You know, I think that that obviously is true for the Big Ten, but it's also true in a lot of these leagues, man. In any league, you know, mid-major, high-major, If you're in the running for a conference championship, you cannot lose on your home court, man, because a lot of these road games are absolutely brutal, especially in some of these places, like you mentioned, the Mountain West, man. I mean, you got some of these great crowds. You know, Colorado State is actually having their Orange Out game, you know, on Friday. Man, that's going to be a crazy environment, man. So definitely couldn't agree more, man. Got to protect home court, man. But switching gears a little bit back to the East Coast, I want to ask you, man, obviously this is a conference that you watched a little bit this year, but I think there's a lot of contenders at the top of the CAA. You know, you have obviously UNC Wilmington, who's undefeated right now in league play. Towson is a team that has a ton of potential. Obviously, they've been out ranking on top 25 poll this season. Hofstra has a dynamic backcourt in Jalen Ray, Aaron Estrada, and Zach Cooks. Super talented. Who do you think is the best team in the CAA at this point, and why?
It's hard to argue against anybody but UNC Wilmington right now, man. I mean, they've won 12 straight games. I mean, they probably have one of the longest win streaks in the country right now. I mean, they've done it in improbable fashion. I mean, they find ways to win. They came back from, I believe it was down 13 versus JMU, and Jalen Sims hit a buzzer beater. They were down 12 against Towson in the game that I went to, and they were able to come back and win it. And then they were down 18 to Drexel the other night, man, and came back and won. I mean, this team is—it's unbelievable how they you know, can pull themselves out of these large deficits, man, and find ways to win. I mean, that right there is the sign of a team, you know, that is battle tested, and they believe, man, because it's easy when you're down 18 in league play to kind of pack it up and you know, send it in, man. But those guys believe they're never out of a game, man. I talked about this a lot. On the major show with Sean Paul this week, man. Their backcourt is as good as any backcourt in that league, man. Jalen Sims, Michael Quarrow, and Sykeem Phillips are all absolutely outstanding, man. It can be either one of those guys' nights on any given day, man. Versus Towson, it was Sykeem Phillips. But, you know, Okwaru and Sims have both had games where they've you know, kind of taken over and had their day, man. I think it's a testament to K.L. Siddle. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. But in the job that he's done with that team, man, I mean, he lets those guys go, man. I mean, it's essentially just, you know, whoever has the best matchup, they're going to take you one-on-one. They're going to turn. They're going to press up. They speed the game up, man. And that's kind of what allows them to get back into these games. A lot of times is they just say, all right, who has the best matchup here? I remember a Towson game, you know, Phillips had it going. He was going at his matchup every single time, man. It finished with 18 points. And obviously they were able to come out there and steal and win, man. So, I'm going to go with UNC Wilmington. I'm not counting out Towson. They've been without Terry Nolan. He's been dealing with some respiratory issues. He's been in and out of the lineup, man. And they're going to need him to be healthy if they're going to have a shot to win the league, man, because obviously he's, you know, currently their fourth leading scorer, averaging about 10 points a game. Big-time transfer coming in from Bradley, man. But he has huge potential as a scorer for them, man. And they're going to need him to be healthy if they're going to have a shot to win the league. And then, of course, Hofstra. In that game where I seen them against Towson, Zach Cooks didn't play. He was out with an ankle injury. He's now back. They've been bringing him off the bench now recently, man, kind of giving them some scoring, some depth off the bench, man, which has kind of worked out for them. And they have, like you mentioned, have three of the best guards in the league with him, with Aaron Estrada, who potentially end up being the CAA Player of the Year, and then with Jalen Ray. So, you know, we'll see how the CAA shakes up. I say those are definitely probably the three best teams in the league. Also, don't count out Delaware. I had an opportunity to see them for half of basketball before that, you know, conundrum happened with the floor at Seco Arena. But they're a team that's going to be, it's going to be in the mix as well in the CAA. If I had to put my money on one team right now, I think I would just put it on UNC Wilmington because of the way that they're playing and because of their guard play right now.
Yeah, I think the CAA is always a weird conference, man. I can remember we were covering the CAA last year, man. I believe Northeastern and JMU were the two best teams in the CAA last year, 1 and 2 seeds in the conference tournament. I believe they split the regular season championship, if I remember correctly. And then Drexel comes out of nowhere and wins the conference tournament. You know, I mean, Hofstra won it 2 years ago, I think, in the COVID year. I don't believe they were the one seed, man. And the CAA seems to always be a conference where the team who's supposed to win never really wins, you know what I'm saying? So I think this could definitely be a year where you see a team like a Towson come through and win it, or a team like Delaware, who nobody's really talking about, you know, come out of nowhere and kind of win the league. Even a team like James Madison, who's talented, they were playing some really good basketball in the non-conference. But, I mean, the CAA, man, the tournament is always pandemonium. It never really goes as planned, man. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, you know, come March, man, especially for a Towson team, you know, and Pat Scarry, who's kind of been chopping at the bit to get that covered in NCAA tournament. But, you know, will this be the year? You know, we'll have to see. But I think if there was ever a conference to win it, you know, I think the CAA definitely is that league, man, where with the unexpected it can become ordinary.
No, for sure, man. We mentioned Boise and Wyoming with a huge game on Thursday. Towson and Hofstra are going to play Thursday, man. That's going to be a huge game in the CAA. It's going to be at Hofstra. Towson obviously won that first game down here in Baltimore. So they're going to, you know, play again Thursday night at Hofstra. Hofstra can try to earn a season split there with Towson. No word yet on Terry Nolan, but, you know, if he's out, I think it's going to be tough for them to kind of beat Hofstra with Zach Cooks in the lineup. Obviously, both of those guys were out last time we've seen him play. So we'll see how that turns out, man. But we mentioned teams defending home court, man, and how important that is when you're you know, fighting for a league championship. And one team that has done that is Norfolk State. They're currently 7-0 on their home court this year, 6-1 in the MEAC play atop the MEAC, man. And obviously, Lavelle Moton and his North Carolina Central Eagles just beat Norfolk State on ESPNU the other night, man. They're now 3-1, tied in the loss column with Norfolk State. Cobham State is a game back at 4-2. South Carolina State is 3-3. Howard is 2-3. UMES is 2-3. Morgan is 2-4. And Dell State is 0-5 in the MEAC right now. So, you know, for you, Drew, I mean, who's your favorite in the MEAC? And, you know, who's one team that you think could kind of be a dark horse to come out of nowhere and kind of knock off, you know, the favorite?
I mean, I think the favorite right now is Norfolk. You know, obviously, I think that they, you know, obviously had a historic non-conference this year. I believe being able to, you know, I think they set the record, if I'm not mistaken, for wins in non-conference. I believe they're sitting at 15-5 overall right now, if I'm not mistaken. But I think that, you know, deliberately so, man, based on what they've done this year, as well as the fact that they're the defending champs, man, I had to pick them as the favorite, man. But and then, you know, given the fact that they're hosting the MEAC tournament, as they always do down there in Norfolk. But I think that there's a couple of dark horses, one being Howard. I think that right now, you know, their record doesn't really reflect it, you know, given that they're 2-3 and 8-10 overall, man. But they're a team that's super talented. Had a chance to watch a little bit of that game versus Notre Dame at home, man. And they're super talented. They're well coached. And they're playing with a swagger right now that I think is going to bode well. I mean, my only question with them would be, you know, their youth. They're very young, obviously, right now. They're, you know, led by a freshman point guard. So I don't know, you know, how well that's going to bode come March. Obviously, Central's always going to be there. You know, Lavelle Moton's going to have his team ready to go. Obviously, the return of Randy Miller back to Central was huge for them. He's leading them in scoring right now. He was a part of the NC Central team that, you know, last went to the NCAA tournament. So, obviously, having him back in the fold, a player who's been there and knows how to win, man, is going to be huge, man. And I'll be remiss, obviously, if I didn't mention Coppin State and the most clutch player in America right now, Linda Tark, who just made, I think, his third buzzer beater in his last, like, four games or something like that, four or five games. He's playing amazing right now in his sophomore year. Definitely playing like a first-team all-MEAC guy right now. And I think Coppin's going to have a chance when you have him and you combine Nenna with, you know, Tyree Corbett down low. I think they're going to have a chance, man. So, as always, man, the MEAC is going to be fun. I think, like I said, I think Norfolk is the favorite, man. But, you know, don't count out Coppin. Don't count out Central. And look out for what Howard can do as well, man. A young team, but, you know, super talented.
I agree with you 100%, man. I think, you know, I do agree that Norfolk has to be the favorite just because of what they've done in the non-conference. And, you know, they were able to win the tournament last year, and Robert Jones has done a great job with them this season, man. But I also agree with you that I love this Howard team, and I actually had the opportunity to be in the building when they blew a 26-point lead against Cobham State, which was absolutely absurd. The biggest comeback in the history of the MEAC in a regular season game was Cobham State's 26-point triumph. Coming back from 26-point deficit to beat Howard on that Monday night. But I love the talent that they have on this roster, man. I mean, Steve Settle was a guy, 6'9", 6'10", sophomore out of DeMatt, the man. And he's somebody, I mean, you mentioned the Notre Dame game. He had 25-7 in that game on MLK Day against them, man. And you have Kyle Foster, probably the best shooter in the MEAC right now, man. He had 26-8 in a game I had an opportunity to see when they played Georgetown. At Cabin One earlier in this year. Then you have Elijah Hawkins, a freshman out of the map. The man, he had 16 points and 11 assists against Villanova, man. And those three guys are as good as any three that you're going to see in the MEAC. Then you got guys like Tay Bibbs and Randall Brumont, who came in from Columbia, older guys, graduate students, man, that have been around college basketball a while, man. And Kenny Blakeney, man, you can't say enough about the job that he's done building this program from where he got it, you know, when he took the job, and obviously getting McCoy Maker in there last year. It didn't end up working out how they wanted it to, but the first five-star to ever commit to a MEAC school, man. And then this year, the talent that they've been able to get there, and they've been able to build off of, you know, kind of the momentum that they had last year, man. It's very, very impressive, man. And, you know, obviously, like you mentioned, the record doesn't say it right now, but they're a team that people aren't going to want to play in the MEAC tournament going forward.
Yeah, man, I think, you know, for one, I mean, Howard's been able to keep some local guys home, man, obviously, and settle with Hawkins, getting those DeMatha guys to stay home, man. So I think that's been huge for them as well, man. But I think one thing, man, one headline from the MEAC, man, that I'm kind of surprised about is Norfolk, man. I mean, excuse me, Morgan State. I think they're the most surprising team right now, man. This is a team that was in the MEAC championship game a year ago. They had a chance to, you know, go dancing, and they've gotten off to a rough start in MEAC play despite the plethora of talent that they brought in, man. I mean, bringing in Miles Douglas from St. Joe's, who's only averaging, you know, 4 points per game this year in 12 minutes. He's only played seven games. Obviously, Seventh Wood's been hurt. He's played 12 games this year, man, but only 18 minutes per game. I mean, they had the talent on their roster, man, but they haven't really been able to figure it out. They're led by DeTonian Ware right now at 11.2 points per game, but they have literally three guys who are sitting right there at 11. You know, Keith McGee's also at 11 a game. But, I mean, it's a team, man. I mean, you look up and down their roster, man, they have plenty of, you know, high major transfers. I mean, Trevor Moore is another guy who obviously played a huge role for them last year, man, but I know Coach Brodus, man, he seems to be trying to do this kind of, you know, win by committee thing. They don't have a single player on their roster that's averaging 30 minutes per game. They're the leading guys, you know, right now is around 27 minutes per game, man. But I think right now, man, when you have that many guys on the roster, it's kind of hard for guys to get a rhythm, you know, and it seems like it's kind of hard. Also, when you have that many guys who are coming in from the high major level, you know, Cincinnati, South Carolina, you know, St. Joe's and UCF from out of, man, I mean,
Keith McGee came from New Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You know, it's tough, man, because all those guys have egos. All those guys are trying to get somewhere, man. And trying to find minutes for those guys is definitely easier said than done, you know. So Morgan State is definitely one of those surprising teams, man. I mean, I think a lot of people thought that they were going to be a lot better. But, you know, I think that obviously, you know, they're talented, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, where they finish down the stretch. I'm sure that they're going to be able to get it going at some point here, but definitely surprising to see, you know, where they are given the, you know, current, you know, currently right now in the MEAC.
Yeah, they're arguably probably the most talented team in the MEAC. I mean, if you took just player for player or guys on that roster versus anybody else in the MEAC, they have the most talent there. You mentioned, you know, the guys that they brought in from those, you know, high major schools and power five and, you know, mid-major plus leagues across the country, man, that they brought in, man. And it has not worked, man. I think, like you mentioned, man, I saw them when they played against George Mason earlier this year, man. They're trying to play 11, 12 guys, and it's impossible to do that because guys can't get in the rhythm, man. Brodus is, you know, I understand you want to keep guys fresh, and, you know, you have a lot of talent, so you had to find minutes for guys, you know what I'm saying? And obviously Malik Miller, you know, was hurt for a large portion of that, you know, non-conference season. He's back now. He's played in eight games this year. He's, you know, back to his normal self, averaging 11 points, 8 rebounds a game for Morgan, man. And, you know, they just got to figure out a way to either, you know, gel somehow. You know, I really don't know, man. You might have to, you know, cut some guys' minutes, and whoever you're rocking with, you got to rock with those guys because it ain't working, man. And they have the talent, man, so it's not really making a lot of sense, man. So we'll see what happens there. But I do agree, man. They were playing for a MEAC championship last year and lost in the championship game to Norfolk State, man. But they were one game away from going to the NCAA tournament last year. And they pretty much returned everybody from that team last year, outside of obviously Troy Baxter. But you bring in, you know, guys like McGee, guys like Seventh Woods, and you did a pretty good job, you know, replacing that production, man. So I don't know what's up with Morgan State, but definitely I agree with you on the fact that they've been underwhelming this year for sure in the MEAC.
For sure, man. I mean, but, you know, we've done a lot of, you know, recapping around the college basketball landscape, man. I think it's time to get into our interview with Tristan Freeman of Bustin' Brackets, man. Definitely had a fun conversation with him, man. So we're going to go ahead and toss you guys over to that interview now.
All righty, guys. As promised, we are here with Tristan Freeman of Bustin' Brackets, man. So, Tristan, man, we're going to give you a chance to, you know, we're gonna give you a chance to give the audience, you know, where they can follow your work, man. Tristan is somebody who has always been supportive of Drew and I, and he does great work himself through Busting Brackets, man. He's a Pittsburgh native, so we do feel sorry for him for that. You know, he's been through a lot of sorry basketball this season while watching Pittsburgh, but you know, we'll save the slander for later, man. Wanted to welcome Tristan onto the show, and thank you for coming on with us today, Tristan.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you guys having me on. I've been a big fan of you guys over the past few months after we met. Just, you know, I appreciate the Pittsburgh slander, but I'm just happy to see a lot of good basketball.
Yes, sir, man. Also, it's Black History Month, so we're proud to be joined on the first episode of the Auto Bidding Black History Month by a fellow black brother, man. So we got three African Americans, young, successful black brothers out here doing some great things, man. So make sure you guys are following Tristan Freeman at HoopsNut35 on Twitter.
351.
I almost got it. And also make sure you guys are following Busting Brackets for all of his content as well, man. So Tristan, we mentioned that you cover Pitt. You also cover Duquesne and RMU, some local Pittsburgh schools. I had the opportunity to see absolute thriller last night between St. Louis and George Mason out of the Atlantic 10. I know you were watching on ESPN Plus. So, you know, quick thoughts, you know, on that game. And then, you know, what do you think both of those teams kind of stack up right here in the A-10 hierarchy?
Yeah, I expected it to be a good game. I think you saw after the pause George Mason had and, you know, the slip up they had against GW when they came back that they're legitimately one of the top teams in the Atlantic 10. Josh Oduro is a star. I would say he's not getting enough love on NBA draft boards. I think he has a professional career ahead of him. Really good. Deshaun Schwartz, Devontae Gaines, just really good veteran players. And Kim English is going to be – he's not going to be in the A-10 much longer because he's shown that he absolutely can be a star coach. And I'm interested to see what they'll do next year when they add more pieces. For St. Louis – I don't know how much, you know, more credit we can give to them after losing Javonte Perkins. That would be for most teams a fatal blow. But to see Gibson Jimerson become the quality scorer, Yuri Collins an absolute snub for the Bob Cousy Award for best point guards, leads nation assist, and yet you saw that night going for career high 35 points, willing to take the ball in his hands and be the offensive score that no one thought he could. He averaged 5 points a game coming into the year. No one thought that he could do all that, but the Billikens have been amazing. I would argue that they're the second best team in the A-10 in front of Davidson. Dayton's just a little too young for me. BCU doesn't have enough offense. And St. Bonaventure only has 5 guys on the roster. So you're not going to pick them to be the second best team at all. But it was an amazing game. St. Louis, highly impressive. And if they bring back Perkins next year, there's no reason why they shouldn't be preseason top 20 because they're that good. And they technically could bring everyone back if they wanted to.
You know, that game was absolutely unreal. And you mentioned Yuri Collins. Not only did he have 35 points, but he had 13 assists, 5 rebounds, and 5 steals. I mean, the dude did absolutely everything for them last night. Mason was trying everything to stop him in the presser after the game. Kim English said, yo, man, like, we tried, you know, we were throwing different bodies at him. They threw Xavier Johnson at him. They threw Ticket Gaines at him, trying to get some length on him, man. But none of it was working, man. And he absolutely willed them to win in that double overtime game. You mentioned Oduro, man. I mean, that dude is – he's unreal. I mean, I Camille has said that he thinks, you know, that he's an NBA player, man. And that dude – his post game is unbelievable. Can step out and shoot the three. He hit a huge pick and pop three to tie the game in that second overtime. But then Yuri Collins obviously went down and won the game on the other end. But he finished with 32 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 9-for-13 from the foul line. And he fouled out 2 of St. Louis' big men. They were trying to guard him. He drew 13 fouls last night, man. I mean, St. Louis had no answer for him, man. So we definitely watched 2 of the best players in the A-10 last night. In Joshua Duro and Yuri Collins, two guys who could potentially end up on the first team all A-10, you know, by the time it's all said and done. But Drew, I know you've watched Mason a lot, you know, as well. I mean, who do you think is the second best team in the A-10? How do you think, you know, things will kind of pan out here as we head down the stretch in the A-10?
Yeah, man. This might be surprising, you know, but I love George Mason. Obviously, I think they're a great program. I also think Kim English has done great things over there in year one. But I'm going to have to say that I'm still going with St. Bonnie's as the second best team in the A-10. I think that there's something to be said about having seniors on your roster. Now, granted, you know, they don't have a lot of depth, you know, but I mean, I think they have what? I think are we five seniors? Osunyi, Kyle Lofton, Jalen Attaway, Holmes is senior. I mean, they have five guys who have been there before. Obviously, they're the defending champions out in the A-10. And granted, they've been up and down this year, very inconsistent. But when you have five seniors out there that have been through the fire, all of them are giving you double-figure production. I have a hard time, you know, picking another team over the Bonnies, man, when it comes to March. Now, granted, I do think that Davidson is the best team in the A-10 right now. I don't think that's really up for debate, granted, you know, given how they've been playing. Davidson did just beat St. Bonaventure on their home floor at Bonnies. But, like I said, man, I think when it comes to March, experience wins, and having old guys on the court that have been through those situations matters, man. So, I'm going to give the nod to St. Bonnie's, even if those guys got to go 37 minutes a game, man. You know, I think they'll find a way to get it done, man. But that's my pick for second best team in A-10.
Drew, they played three guys 40 minutes last night, and one guy 35 and one guy 33. They literally played their bench a total of 12 minutes. I mean, that is absolutely unfathomable. Like, that's not sustainable at this level of college basketball. Like, Osun has been in and out of the lineup all year, dealing with some back injuries. Obviously, earlier in the year, he missed a few games. I think he was down right after that Charleston trip. And obviously, we know, you know, Kyle Lofton is the ultimate Iron Man, but eventually, man, that's going to catch up to you, especially if you play a team like VCU that's going to press and going to guard and defend. And that stuff wears you down over the course of a 40-minute basketball game, when, of course, over a 30-minute regular season, 30-game regular season. So that's my only worry with St. Bonaventure. The talent is there, but Mark Schmidt has to start getting some guys some minutes off the bench, or he's going to run his guys into the ground, and they're not going to have any chance once they get to the A-10 tournament. You got to win potentially, you know, three or four games in a 4 or 5 day period. So, you know, we'll see what happens there.
I would also add that this is the second year in a row that St. Bonaventure is putting up the exact same lineup. And from a scouting purpose, they're the easiest team to prepare for because you know exactly what they're going to do. In conference play with these coaches who are already so familiar with them, you can come up with a game plan. Like even a couple weeks ago when they came in Pittsburgh to play Duquesne, I would argue that Duquesne outplayed them because Dan Broad and the coaching staff, you know, was able to handle the guards. The problem with that one was that Duquesne's just so small that literally 78%, 80% of their offense was Osunyi putback dunks because after missed layups. But that Duquesne probably should have won that game if they just had larger size. You can prepare and scout this team, and it's going to be hard to see even in the tournament. Are they going to be able to withstand playing consecutive games in a row against really good teams and really physical bigs? Because Soon's going to have to go up against Okoro, Holmes, Hassan Ward, Adoro. He's going to go up against three of them in a row if they're going to get the auto bid. And most likely, I don't think that they have any shot at that large because they're probably going to take a few more losses in the next few weeks.
You know, for sure. I definitely agree. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that ends up shaking out. We know they have the talent, man, but I don't know, you know, as far as the depth and, you know, how they end up, you know, kind of getting some production from guys that aren't in the starting lineup. So we'll see how that ends up shaking out. But I want to pivot to Drew. Got something to add on that, Drew?
Okay, so me and Tristan gave our second best team. Who's your second best team in A-10? We got St. Louis, St. Bonnie's. Who are your second best team in A-10?
And I would have to go – listen, it's tough, bro. I want to try – I was on the VCU train until last night when Dayton went there and beat the brakes off of them dudes. Like, so I don't know, man. I'm leaning George Mason just because of the fact that Josh Oduor hasn't really been healthy. Obviously, last night after that game, I saw him kind of walking around the court. He was limping a little bit. They also are dealing with some injuries to Ed Polite. They played him about 5 minutes last night. He wasn't really moving well, so the coaches kind of took him out of the game. He didn't play the rest of the night, so kind of hurting a little bit of their depth off the bench. They're also having to play their starters an extremely high amount of minutes. Last night, Ticket Gaines played 50 minutes in that double overtime game. Deshaun Schwartz plays 48. Devon Cooper plays 44. Xavier Johnson plays 45. Oduro plays 42. So, you know, and then off their bench, you had Otis Frazier played 11. Next highest man was Malik Henry with three. TJ Gasson played 1 minute, and Jamal Hartwell played 1 minute. So, like, they're also not getting a lot out of their bench. So they're kind of a similar situation to St. Bonnie's, where they have the talent, but I don't know if they're going to have enough depth off the bench if they don't get some guys healthy and try to find some guys, you know, some minutes off the bench to try to get some production. So if I had to pick one team, man, I you know what? I like St. Louis, but I think they rely too much on Yuri Collins. Like last night, you know, it took 35 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists, and 5 steals, you know, to win that game last night. And obviously, they're not going to need that from him every night. Obviously, Mason did a good job. Did a good job last night on Jimmerson, held on to 8 points last night, and I believe all 8 came in the first half of that basketball game. So, you know, they're gonna need more from him going down the stretch. But I don't know, man. I think if I had a gun in my head, pick a second best team right now, I would probably have to lean with. I'm gonna go Mason. I'm gonna go Mason because I think I'm gonna trust Kim Ingles to figure that out and to get some guys off the minutes. Off the bench some minutes and kind of figure out that depth situation down there in Fairfax, Virginia.
Okay, fair.
So we spoke a lot about A-10. I want to split to the Horizon League. Obviously, Katrician, you cover RMU as well, and they're currently toward the bottom of the Horizon League standings, but that league is a team that has two great teams at the top in Oakland and Cleveland State. I don't know if either of them have played Robert Morris yet, but you know, what's your take on that league and you know, who do you think is the favorite in that league if you had to pick between Oakland and Cleveland State, or do you have another team that you think can kind of sneak in there and compete for the league?
Yeah, so I think in a non-conference, you can make an argument that the Horizon League was the most disappointing collectively because Cleveland State didn't get any meaningful wins. Wright State was an absolute disaster until they beat NC State. And literally half the league only got one or fewer Division I wins. It was just really disappointing when you consider all the star power they had in with Antoine Davis of Detroit Mercy, Patrick Baldwin of Milwaukee, and that's just turned into a complete disaster. He's basically been day-to-day with an injury for 2 months. I don't know how that's possible, but it's definitely been between Oakland and Cleveland State. Cleveland State brought back 6 fifth-year seniors and then added 2 more in the offseason. They're literally the Florida State of the mid-major world. When they play 12 guys, physical experience. Demoy Hodge, a former JUCO star, has emerged as a quality 15-point-per-game caliber scorer for them when it needs to be. Oakland doesn't have a lot of depth because they play pretty much 7 guys, but Jalen Moore has been a quality point guard for them, second in nation to Yuri Collins in assist. And Jamal Cain, you could argue, has been the biggest impact transfer this season. He averaged 6-4 at Milwaukee and Marquette for 4 years, averaging around 20-10. He's just blossomed into an absolute unstoppable power forward for them. And Greg Camp of Oakland, he's one more underrated coaches in the game. He doesn't get enough credit. He's been really good for them. Cleveland State beat Oakland the first time around, but both of them have sort of taken a bat loss since. So it's going to be up for grabs between those two. Wright State has the potential, but they don't play enough defense consistently to, I think, beat both of them back-to-back in the tournament because they're likely going to be a third seed. But look out for Northern Kentucky. They're an interesting team. They lost a lot. They have a really good sophomore, Marquez Bork, really, although a young team, been playing well late. And I think they have the potential to put a scare into somebody, potentially make a run in the tournament. But it's definitely down to Wright State, Oakland, and Cleveland State, who's going to get the one bid in the league. And then everyone else pretty much an afterthought. It's more of just scrambling for position to see who can potentially get either a bye or home court in the first round matchup.
So if you were to pick one team, who would you give the edge to out of those teams? If you were to pick one team to win the league right now?
I have to give the edge to Cleveland State because I think there's Oakland's too reliant on Kane and Moore to go off. Cleveland State has 8 different guys that can beat you, really good defensively. They're a bit inconsistent. Like, they played RMU twice and only won those by a combined 5 points. RMU arguably could have won either of those games, and the Colonials were underhanded in that as well. Like, they had no reason to even be close. But sometimes Cleveland State takes the foot off the gas. But when they play up against an opponent, you know, like Oakland or even Wright State, they look the part. And I think as long as they can stop sleeping sometimes on the road or even at home, that they'll be the team to beat. And I don't see why they don't make it back-to-back trips to the tournament.
Man, you said you don't know how Patrick Baldwin Jr. has been day-to-day for 2 months. I do. He's like took a page out of McCurr Maker's book and said, yeah, my draft stock seems to be plummeting by the day. I'm just going to sit for as long as I can. And, you know, hey, if my draft – because, look, I think he's the guy that came in the year. Obviously, he was supposed to be a top five, you know, top ten pick in the draft. He got out there and one looking too shaky, man. He said, yeah, I got a back injury or whatever injury he got. And he's sitting right on that pine and probably going to hope his draft out doesn't plummet any further, man. That's exactly what he's doing, man. He learned from that man McCurr Maker last year and said, yeah, I think I'm going to just, you know, throw in the towel now.
He thought he was going to be able to Antoine Davis his situation, you know what I'm saying, playing for his pops and killing, but, you know what I'm saying, everybody can't do what Antoine Davis does, man. It's not as easy as it looks playing for your father, man. If you want proof, just go ahead and look at Milwaukee, man, because that situation, like Tristan said earlier, has definitely been turned out to be a bit disappointing, man. So we talked a lot about a bunch of mid-major teams, man. So who is your one dark horse Cinderella team? If you had to pick one mid-major team that you think can make it run this year in the dance.
It's interesting because a lot of talk about the fifth-year transfers and player and more talent coming back through the portal has helped the power conference teams, which is true. I could make an argument, depending on how the conference tournaments go, this could be the strongest field of 13 to 16 seeds we've had in modern time. Almost every conference has a legitimate a quality opponent. You look at Weber State of the Big Sky, really good team. You look at the CAA, you know, UNC Wilmington come out of nowhere to dominate the conference so far. And yet I still think they're probably the fourth most talented team. Like, I think if you have to pick a team in that conference that could win a game as a 14 seed, Hofstra would be the one because their backcourt's legit. Even in the A-Sun, you know, Liberty's playing right now, but teams like Florida Gulf Coast and Bellarine, really good as well. There is a lot of Cinderella potential. I think Iona is going to be the easy one for everyone to pick. I don't necessarily want to pick them, but don't be surprised if New Mexico State or Seattle from the WAC. Our guy Sean Paul correctly picked Oral Roberts to beat Ohio State as a 15 seed. But there's going to be some 15 seeds with some firepower of their own that's going to put a scare in some of these two seeds. And if you look at New Mexico State with Teddy Allen, who proved he can be an all-conference scorer at West Virginia and Nebraska, he's doing fine down there in the WAC and a whole lot of experience. I wouldn't be surprised if there could be even more upsets this year in the first round compared to last year when it comes to the lower seeds, because there's going to be a lot of talented teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, man. For me, my Cinderella pick, you know, for a dark horse is going to be South Dakota State. And I think, obviously, you know, they're a team that's, you know, they're 20-4 right now. They already got 20 wins. They're 11-0 right now in the summer league. And they're a team that is literally just clicking on all cylinders, man. I mean, obviously, last year you mentioned Oral Roberts, you know, who was kind of the darling of last year's NCAA tournament, who won the summer league last year as a 4 seed, you know, and they beat the same South Dakota State team in the tournament last year. They were upset as the 1 seed in last year's summer league tournament. So this year, I mean, they're coming back with the vengeance. I think it's their league to lose, man. I think that they're going to come into this year's, you know, summer league tournament with a chip on their shoulder, understanding that, you know, what happened last year, and they're going to want to get that back. They're playing amazing basketball right now. And, you know, I think that they're a team that's obviously a high potent offense, you know, for one, led by, well, actually, the leading scorer right now is Noah Friedel, but obviously he's been out for a while. We're not sure when they're going to get him back. But if they do get him back, I mean, you're going to add a guy that's, you know, and I mean, they're going to become a team that's even more dangerous, man. But from an offensive standpoint, you know, they're shooting almost 45% from a 3-point line. Almost 52% from the field. So they're extremely efficient. They're extremely high scoring team. When you get in March, man, you get a team like that that's playing with confidence. They can shoot the ball like that from three. Watch out, you know, because if they get a favorable matchup with a team that maybe isn't as good shooting from the perimeter, they're absolutely a team that can pull off an upset in the NCAA tournament in advance, man. So They're my pick for dark horse in our team this year.
Yeah, my pick is going to come out of Conference USA. It's not going to be a team that everybody probably thinks I'm going to pick, which I feel like most people are going to pick UAB, but I'm going with North Texas, man. I mean, I think North Texas is a team, you know, obviously they won the Conference USA last year and won a game in the tournament last year. They weren't able to advance to the Sweet 16. But I think this is the year where, you know, you bring back a lot of that core from last year's team. They had a great win over Drake down in Florida in November, man. You know, they're a team that defends their ass off, man. They're going to be a team that, you know, if they come out of Conference USA is going to be a league that is going to have some potential at-large candidates with UAB, with Louisiana Tech. I think it's going to be tough, but, you know, with conferences like the ACC and the Pac-12 being so down this year, there's a possibility that you can get a potential, you know, if North Texas or Louisiana Tech were to, you know, win that conference tournament, a team like a UAB could potentially get an at-large bid. You could potentially get a two-bid Conference USA, but, you know, we'll see how that ends up shaking out down the line. But I think North Texas is a team, because of the way that they defend and because of their experience, is a team that could potentially make some noise come March this season.
What's interesting about the Conference USA is I think the team that may be most likely to win a game in a tournament in that 13th seed range could actually be Western Kentucky. Because in a tournament, there's always going to be some matchups that opponents just have no idea how to scout and defend. Jamarian Sharp, 7'5" center, who has been absolutely fantastic. I didn't know how much he was even going to play with his size, but he's been great. If he gets a team, you know, and I'll just hypothetically say he goes up against Villanova, who doesn't have a ton of size. That could be a really interesting matchup if the Hilltoppers guards can deal with Moore and Gillespie. Like those kind of matchups, that could scream upset potential in the first round. Now, they continue to underachieve. I'm not going to pick them to beat Louisiana Tech or UAB in the tournament, but if they could somehow sneak their way into it, there will be an interesting team to watch from a scouting perspective, because I don't know how smaller teams are going to be able to deal with Sharp.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they're currently 2-6 right now in Conference USA, so they're going to have some work to do, because they're going to be a lower seed. They're going to have to play probably two of those, you know, top teams in order to even get out of the league. If you play UAB or North Texas or UAB and Louisiana Tech or however that shakes out, even on their side of Conference USA, Middle Tennessee is 14-6 on the year and 5-2. In the Conference USA, so they have their work cut out for them. So, you know, we'll see if they can kind of turn things around.
I feel more confident if Keith Williams was eligible this year. That would make me feel a little more confident about them. But, you know, it is what it is with them. If they could bring everyone back, they could have potential. But who knows with that program.
Yeah, no, for sure. None of us mentioned Murray State, but I think that would have kind of been a cop out for any of us to mention them, because we already know that they're, you know, potentially, you know, they're a 20-win team right on the cusp of that top 25. It's time to rank the Ramblers. I've said it all week. We need to get them the racers. I said the Ramblers. Excuse me. Rank the racers of Murray State.
Get the fans upset. Getting them confused.
Hey, listen, my bad. Hey, to the Murray State Racer faithful, I apologize. You guys have been showing us a lot of love recently. You know, since we had you guys ranked number one in our All Facts Media mid-major polls here and seen that. Go and check that out. But Trisha, man, how far do you think Murray State can go in the NCAA tournament this season?
If they get an 11 seed, then I almost will automatically going to pick them against any six seed, depending on the matchup. They absolutely can make a run. You know, with mid-majors, you need to have a quality guard and a quality big man just to make sure that there isn't any matchup disadvantages that you have to deal with. And they have that with K.J. Williams and Tevin Brown, one of the best combos in the country. If it wasn't for last year's, you know, disappointing season, they probably would be ranked right now, because they have the talent. They have the coaching, the supporting cast. They're a really good shooting team as well, 36% from deep. They don't have any clear weaknesses you deal with. And even though the Ohio Valley isn't necessarily among the top four or five mid-major leagues, you know, they do have talent at the top with Morehead State and Belmont. And we've seen what Murray State has done with those teams already. They've shown that they're a quality program. I think that assuming they don't lose to any of the bottom feeders, I think they should be an at-large team. there's no reason why that they don't have the potential to make a run of their own. I think they may be even better, more equipped to do so than Iona or some other mid-major teams that could be offset by not having great shooting. I think Murray State has the ability to not go cold. They have the big man down low. It's not going to be intimidated by anyone else. And I think the Racers, I've had them number one in my own mid-major rankings for weeks now. I've always been a believer in them, and there's no reason why they can't make some noise if they get in.
I mean, when I look at Murray State, you've obviously mentioned Tevin Brown and KJ Williams. But for me, man, I think obviously this is a team that obviously coached by Matt McMahon, and he's done an exceptional job, man. Obviously, we know what he did with John Morant when they got a win in the tournament over Marquette. And then nearly made – I mean, they were this close to making it to the Sweet 16 that year. I believe they lost to Florida State in that second round game. But, I mean, this is a program that exudes pedigree, exudes winning. They're going to go into the NCAA tournament. You know, they're not going to be fearing anybody. You know, they're going to go in there believing that they're the better team on the floor. And obviously, like I said, they've won 10 games in a row. They already reached the 20-win plateau, man. And, I mean, I think they're obviously on pace to be – well above, you know, maybe 30-2, 30-3, you know what I'm saying, somewhere in there. So, I mean, they're going to go into a tournament with the utmost confidence. And I think that when you're coached, you know, by a guy who's been there before, you know, I think that that's going to say a lot about the Racers, man. So I would not be surprised at all if they break through, man, and get to the second weekend this year.
You know, I mean, shoot. Neither would I, man. We saw last year what Max Asemussen and Kevin O'Banner did for Oral Roberts. And Tristan mentioned that 1-2 punch with KJ Williams and Tevin Brown, man. KJ Williams has been absolutely outstanding in his last four games. He has four straight games, scoring at least 20. He's had 10 plus rebounds in three of them, and he's 3 of 7 from the 3-point line in his last three games, man. So not only is he killing guys inside, but he's starting to kind of, you know, stretch the floor and knock down the 3-point shot as well, man. If he can add that to his game, he's only shooting 30% from three, but the fact that he's even a threat to knock down threes at his size, 6'10", 245, gives him a whole new dimension to that offense, man. And then Tevin Brown, man, is just a big-time player, man. We've seen Max Asemussen, what he did last year in the tournament. Tevin Brown is a guy, you know, versus Memphis, he had 22-7-4 in that win over Memphis on the road. Versus Auburn, he had 22-9-2. Versus Belmont, 18-6-3. Versus Chattanooga, 33-9-2. He's somebody that just shows up in big games, man. So he's somebody that you can count on, you know, when the lights get bright. He's going to show up, and he's going to be somebody that can carry you to a win, you know, in potential NCAA tournament games, man. So I think we're all in agreement that Murray State is definitely one of the highest ceiling, arguably the highest ceiling mid-major team this season, man. But before we get you out of here, man, we got to ask you about Pitt, man. And obviously, your Pitt Panthers obviously are having a rough season over there in the ACC, man. And, you know, they've been through it, man. Obviously, you know, Jeff Capel is you know, obviously coming over from Duke and, you know, obviously had his time under Coach K. And, you know, it's trying to build that program. They struggled with, obviously, E.J. Horton. And he's been in the lineup and out of the lineup due to his legal issues off the court, man. But, you know, like my man Wale said, man, sue me, I'm rooting for everybody who's black, man. So I want Kelly – I want my boy Jeff Capel to turn it around, man. But what do you think that has to happen for him to you know, begin to turn this program around and get Pitt moving in the right direction?
Yeah, the first thing is to actually, you know, keep your best players around. You know, last year losing Justin Champagne, who was one of the best players in the country last year, you had a bad locker room and bad culture, so you kind of had to press the reset button, but you still need talent, and you need to bring in pieces that fit with each other. Mo Gee has been a great transfer from Stony Brook, a real good athlete, quality defender, but he's also the only forward that can play with John Hughley, the team's best player inside. You know, Dan Lodolfo, the transfer from Oakland, and Chris Payton, the JUCO transfer, they don't fit well. So as much as I want to give, you know, Coach Capel a pass for, you know, the injuries and suspensions to not having depth, you also brought in players that don't necessarily fit. So I think the one, not necessarily positive, but one thing, assuming he comes back next year, is you should bring back all of your key pieces except Gee. And if you could bring in a couple of transfers, a quality forward transfer, a playmaking guard, because I'm not so sure that Jamarius Burton, Femi Odekwale can play point, if you bring that in, you should have a team that's competitive. Next year is going to be it. Because assuming you bring in veteran transfers, your entire lineup's going to be all upperclassmen. And most of them is not going to have any eligibility left. So if things don't work out, you can, you know, start over with a new coach and have a clean slate to work with. But I'm not, you know, going to be worked up too much. What happens the rest of the way? It is what it is with this current team. You don't have much shooting. You don't have a lot of offense or depth. You know, you're just going to have to keep adding in pieces and build off of Hughley, Burton, and Nwodukwale. But next year is going to be really interesting for not only Pitt, but the other programs. You know, it's going to be year three in Horizon for Andy Toole and RMU. You're seeing signs of progress, but the program's not used to being at the bottom because they were dominant in Northeast. And at Duquesne, you know, it's another rebuilding year for a young team for Keith Danbrot. They're going to have to bring in some pieces, too, so that they can be competitive in the A-10. So although all three programs are down, there's potential, there's hope. But next year is going to be a really big year for the local programs because it's going to be a lot of expectations.
Hey, man, you know, we're wishing you guys the best, man. Hopefully you guys can get it figured out over there, man. You know, we hate to see you guys down, man. I mean, growing up as a Syracuse fan, you know, I couldn't remember those days, man, those battles, man, the Jamie Dixon era of Pitt basketball, man, you know, when they had DeJuan Blair and, you know, terrorizing the 2-3 zone, man, Ashton Gibbs and those guys, man. They had some great teams, man. So I'm hoping that Pitt can get back to those days, you know, sooner rather than later.
It's crazy to think about because Pitt, Syracuse is going to have to move on from Boeheim eventually. Georgetown struggling, Indiana trying to get back. You got a lot of new bloods coming in, but imagine college basketball when some of these older programs with history can get back into the fold. It's going to take time. We're in a new era with everything, but hopefully it all can get back to semi-normal. We can start, you know, humbling some of these programs.
Not for sure, man. Hey, listen, we'll see what happens, man. You guys have to go ahead and take your lumps now, you know what I'm saying, and go ahead and eat all that slander that comes your way. But it's been a lot of fun today coming on, having you on the podcast, Trisha, man. Like you said in the beginning in the podcast, make sure you guys are following at HoopsNut351. Also follow at Bustin' Brackets, man. He does great work covering the game of college basketball, covering all those teams locally in Pittsburgh, man. So make sure you guys are tapped into his content, man. And thanks again, Trisha, for coming on, man. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you having me on. We'd love to come back anytime.
Alrighty, guys, that was Tristan Freeman of Bustin' Brackets, man. Make sure you guys are following him. We mentioned at HoopsNut351. Make sure you guys are following Bustin' Brackets on Twitter, man. Like I said, Dickie V loves Bustin' Brackets, man. He's constantly tweeting out my guys' articles, man. So if Dickie V can do it, you guys can tap in with my guy, man, and make sure you guys are showing him some love, man. He's definitely one of the most genuine guys that we've had the opportunity to come into contact with in this media business, always showing love. So definitely enjoyed having him on the podcast to talk some mid-major hoops, man. But it's now time for our favorite segment of the week. That is the craziest thing we saw. So I'll start with you, Drew. What was the craziest thing that you saw this week in college basketball?
Yeah, man, definitely the craziest thing that I saw took place last night at Lehigh, man. You know, Lehigh races a 17-point deficit with 4 minutes and some change left against Navy to come back to steal it, you know, with the game-winning steal with around 10 seconds left. And that way, I mean, in all my years of playing college basketball, that is something that I just had not seen. I mean, you're up 60-43, you know, with 4 minutes and 49 seconds left in the game. You think, all right, man, we got this one in the bag. You absolutely take your foot off the gas and get outscored 20-2 over the last 4 minutes, 49 seconds of that game, man. I mean, as a player, I can't fathom how you let that happen. As a coach, I can't fathom how you let that happen. But I know one thing, man, when the wheels get turning, you start turning that ball over, and obviously, you know, if you're Navy, you know, you're on the road, the home court, the home crowd gets into it. It gets a little spooky, man. But nonetheless, man, I mean, I think the Lehigh Twitter page tweeted out, man, that the NCAA record for a comeback in college basketball under 5 minutes was 19 points. You know, so they nearly set a new record in that 17-point comeback under 5 minutes left, man. And I remember we were at Quinnipiac. We came back from down, I think, 9 points with like 40-something seconds left or something like that. And I thought that was like improbable to be able to come back from down 9 in under a minute. But nonetheless, man, to get outscored 20-2 to end the game is definitely something that you don't see too often, man. So that's my nod for craziest thing I saw this week.
Yeah, man, I mean, how about this? The win percentage was 99.6% with 5 minutes remaining. Navy had 99.6% chance to win that basketball game. That means there was a 0.4% chance that they could win that game, less than 1% chance that they could win that game. And they wound up pulling that one out of their behind and winning an absolute thriller, man. I mean, that's absolutely embarrassing. You're up 60-43, and you only scored 2 points for the remainder of the basketball game, more than a five-minute stretch. And Lehigh, on the other hand, scores 20 to come back and steal the win, man. That's definitely absolutely preposterous. And if anybody had Navy money line in that game, I know you're probably ready to go make a trip down to Annapolis and say and do some very unkind things to keep it at that. But for me, the crazy thing that I saw was that George Mason and St. Louis game. We talked about it on the interview with Tristan, man. But I can't put in perspective, you know, how crazy that game truly was, man. How back and forth it was. There were so many times Mason trailed by 14 with about 10 minutes to play in the second half. Man, St. Louis had really dominated the game the entire way, man. I mean, they didn't have an answer for Yuri Collins. They weren't really shooting it well offensively. But then Davon Cooper just gets extremely guns a-blazing in that second half, man. Mason, they even trailed by, like I said, they were down by 14 with 10 minutes left. And then they were down by about – I want to say they were down by about 12 with about – oh, no, they were down 11 with about 4 minutes, 4 minutes and some change to play, man. They came back, used like a 12-0 run to tie the game. 14 – I believe it was like a 14-3 run, I believe, to end regulation, man. And ended up losing out in double overtime. Josh Oduro, Yuri Collins makes a free throw to give St. Louis a 3-point lead. Oduro comes down, bangs a three to tie the game. And then Yuri Collins takes the ball length of the court in double overtime and makes a layup at the buzzer to win that basketball game. But, you know, I read Yuri Collins and Josh Oduro's stats in that basketball game. They were completely insane. But also in that game, we didn't mention Davon Cooper, 22 points, 4 rebounds in that game. Ticket Gaines plays 50 minutes, scores 12 points, grabs 17 rebounds for George Mason. And Deshaun Schwartz, 15 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists. Those guys, I mean, that game was absolutely outstanding, man. It was one of the best games I had the opportunity to see all season long. So that was definitely wild, man. And kudos to George Mason for coming back and battling, man. And they're going to have a quick turnaround because they're going to get LaSalle on Saturday on the road, looking to kind of bounce back and keep themselves afloat at the top of the A-10.
Yesterday must have been comebacks must have been a theme of yesterday's game, man. I mean, 14-3 run, down 11. Obviously, we just mentioned Lehigh, man. I guess, hey, man, ain't over to the fat lady sings, man. It's not over to the fat lady sings, man. So I think if there's one theme for college basketball last night, man, that had to be it, man. But nonetheless, I know we have some big-time games coming up on this weekend slate, man. So what games are you looking forward to this weekend, Ace?
Yeah, Friday night, man, we're going to get San Diego State at Colorado State. It's going to be a revenge game for Colorado State. And San Diego State absolutely drilled Colorado State at home a few weeks back, man. So Colorado State is going to be looking to get some revenge. They're going to host San Diego State Friday at 9 p.m. It's going to be a huge game in the Mountain West as both of those teams try to stay atop that league. We mentioned Boise and Wyoming playing Thursday night. So best four teams in the Mountain West are playing on back-to-back night. So make sure you guys are tuning into those games. Big game in the A-10 is going to be Dayton at St. Louis Saturday at 2 p.m. Both of these teams have been, you know, playing better of late, man, and are going to be, you know, toward the top of that league. St. Louis is one game back of Davidson in the loss column. Davidson, after losing to VCU, is two games back in the loss column, man. So that's going to be a huge game for them to kind of stay up there and stay toward the top. Actually, no, I'm sorry. Dayton won. Dayton beat VCU. Dayton and St. Louis are both one game back of Davidson in the loss column in the A-10. Dayton's currently 7-2 in the A-10. St. Louis is 6-2 in the A-10. Both of those teams are going to be looking to kind of stay up there. Dayton's won 3 straight. St. Louis has won 4 straight. So two of the hottest teams in the A-10 squaring off. That's going to be Saturday at 2 p.m., a home game for St. Louis. And they're going to have big stretch here. They got, after they get Dayton on Saturday, they're going to get LaSalle. Then they got two games against St. Bonaventure. So huge, you know, four-game stretch here for St. Louis coming up here in A-10 play. And then we're going to get huge battle in the WAC. Undefeated 8-0 Seattle is going to go to New Mexico State Saturday, 6 p.m., man. That's going to be a huge game in the Mountain West. I mean, excuse me, in the WAC out west as Seattle looks to stay undefeated and get a big-time road win over New Mexico State. New Mexico State is going to obviously be looking to defend their home court. You mentioned how important that is for conference regular season championships to be able to defend your home court. So that's going to be a big one Saturday at 6 p.m. Northern Iowa is going to travel to Drake. Drake is the number 17 team in our poll this week. Northern Iowa has been playing better after having a pretty underwhelming non-conference schedule. They've been playing well, and they've worked their way back into the picture at the top of the Missouri Valley Conference. So that's going to be a big game Saturday at 6 p.m. And then out of the CAA, UNC Wilmington at Hofstra Monday, 5 p.m. We talked a lot about Hofstra and UNC Wilmington earlier in the league, earlier in the episode. Both of these teams are going to be trying to stay at the top of their league. So big game in the CAA, UNC Wilmington at Hofstra. That's Monday at 5 p.m.
Definitely got some fun games, man. I hope you guys get in front of your TV, man. Tune in, man. I think that Mountain West games are going to be huge, man. If I had to pick, you know, out of those games, I think that San Diego State, Colorado State game, and Wyoming Boise game would be the two games I pencil in on my schedule, man. So I definitely hope that all the listeners have a chance to watch some of these games, man, and tune in, because it's going to be major March implications in a lot of these games, man, and teams that could potentially be playing in the field of 68 come March, man. But that's going to do it. First episode of the Auto Bid, man. I hope you guys enjoyed our interview with Tristan Freeman of Busting Brackets, man. If you guys haven't subscribed to this podcast, make sure you guys do so. It goes a long way, man. Make sure you tune into all of our work across all platforms, man. TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. Go get your merch. You know what I'm saying? The link is in our bio on Instagram, on Twitter. Go ahead and cop you a little hoodie, cop you a T-shirt for your boo. You know, Valentine's Day coming up, you know, in a couple of days. So, you know, go ahead and splurge on your baby. We got pink shirts, you know what I'm saying? I know she like that. You know, we got all sizes, so go ahead and bless her, you know what I'm saying? And we'll catch you guys next week. Until next time, this is going to be Pull Up Tay on the outro. You guys enjoy your week. And happy Black History Month. I'm drawing in the clutch, boy. You beating on me. I can tell. It's time to get a check, boy. Check, boy. On the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me. I can tell. What's the topic of discussion? What we talking about? Take your best shot. I'ma take the last shot. I'm drawing in the clutch, boy.